This is what I use to record the talks only, and they go up on the podcast site, which is, if you just type in Dharma Punks with an X, NYC, you'll find it. And there's about 220 talks available for download. So, I thought I'd give tonight a very basic overview of the Buddha's basic teachings on the Four Noble Truths. I probably will only go over actually the first three out of four. So you get what you pay for. But it'll be enough. It's important for me to say that this is not supposed to be a theory. A theory is something that you cognize, you get intellectually, you tell your friends about it, and it doesn't change anything in your life. It's just something that you carry around. These observations, on the other hand, are like the fundamental laws that govern the way the Buddha viewed how suffering and stress arises in our life. And knowing or having an acquaintance with this core foundation really will save us a lot of time and give a structure to our entire spiritual practice. The Four Noble Truths, or the concepts that guide them, run through all of the Buddha's teachings from his very first in the Dhammacakkappavattana, which was the first time he taught, through his great teachings, the Satipatthana, and the Paticchasamuppada, Anattalakkhana, all the way to the very last teachings of his life in the Parinibbana. All of his teachings were rested or were supported by this very core understanding that he achieved during his enlightenment. So, heavy stuff. Starting out with the First Noble Truth, the First Noble Truth has got to be the most poorly translated and misunderstood idea of any spiritual idea. For a long time, it was I almost would believe purposely mistranslated, just to make it sound more difficult or more depressing than the Buddha meant. The Buddha's First Noble Truth is quite simply a very basic, undeniable, irrefutable observation, which is as follows. In life, there are uncomfortable experiences. That's it. There are unreliable, uncomfortable experiences. Now, these experiences of discomfort can be really big, like old age, sickness, and death are the first three that the Buddha mentioned in his core teaching. But then he went on to say, it's not just that, it's also not getting what we want, getting what we don't want, being stuck with people and things we don't like, being separated from people and things we do like. The basic stresses and disappointments. What's the foundation of this discomfort or unreliability or core disappointment is in the word dukkha, which the Buddha used. And he said dukkha is occurring constantly in our lives. Or very frequently, not all the time, but frequently. For example, you wake up, it's Tuesday. I've got to go
if you have to go to work, you go in, you know, you wake up, go in the subway. There's always other people, like, looking like this, you know. Either door tries to close in your face. Somebody's standing in the doorway. Somebody's taking up three seats. Somebody's hugging the pole. Somebody coughs on you in the middle of flu season. You get there, and either there's too much to do or there's nothing to do. And then lunch arrives, and it's tuna sandwich, or is it, I don't know, chicken salad, or whatever people eat. And then there's more hours. And then there's somebody asking you to do something you don't want to do. Somebody not approving of something you've done. Somebody brushing by you, and all this stuff. Dukkha, 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 dukkha. There's nothing you can do about it. That's the core of the First Noble Truth. That is going to happen. There's nothing we can do about it. And if we realized this, everything would be fucking fine. But that's the problem. What happens is, at first, the body unconsciously, or preconsciously, I should say, to be correct, or more accurately, we have this reaction whenever things don't go our way, whenever something arises that we don't want, whenever we have a setback or a frustration. It's what the Buddha called Vedana. It's just this, and this we have no control over whatsoever. It's inevitable. The physical priming of a reaction takes about 140 milliseconds to arise, but consciousness takes about 500 milliseconds for you to form a thought. That doesn't mean you're stupid, it just means that it makes sense that we have physical reactions before we have thought. It takes thought a while to coalesce. So before we have a thought, we already have a physical response, a reaction, and that makes dukkha often even more unbearable and difficult. So not only do we have the harsh remark or the feeling of boredom or being tired and worn down or just seeing a bill that we didn't want to see arrive or the experience of opening a check that's smaller than we want it to be. Not only do we have that, but we have this physical, I don't like this. And this brings us to the second noble truth, which is that the mind doesn't like this deal. The mind wants to have an inoculation against any discomfort. We are born with incredible tools, having a human brain. Think about it. We very, in a short period of time, we've soared from just another species to the dominant species on the planet. We've made the entire ecosystem bend and break so that it'll make every little wish to be comfortable when it's hot and warm when it's cold. We have this tool that gives us the optimistic belief that we can accomplish anything. And we can accomplish a great deal. But the one thing we can't do is inoculate ourselves from stress and discomfort and pain. We are all going to grow old whether we like it or not. We are all going to experience people not always approving. We're going to post things on Facebook, yes. We're going to do it. They get no likes whatsoever. This will happen to you. I know the thought is nigh unbearable, but it might happen. We will search for affection and attention, and it will not be returned. From the very moment we were babies, we sought emotional mirroring, which means we wanted our parents to acknowledge our emotions, to give us a sense that we would be protected, that our emotions were appropriate, and sometimes they did, and sometimes they didn't. Those horrible people. So we've been living with dukkha for a long time, but what we do when dukkha arises is we react. We look for a way out. We look for relief. Occasionally, if it's just something we can swat away, the thing that causes dukkha, we will. If it's a mosquito or a bug or just an irritating person that we can avoid, we'll go out of our way to avoid them. But many times in life, when an uncomfortable feeling arises, a feeling of tiredness, a feeling of sadness, a feeling of why doesn't somebody call me, or why do so many people call me, a feeling of frustration, whatever feelings arise, we look for an escape, something to divert our attention, something to pull us away so that we don't have to experience that feeling of vedana, that feeling of the thoughts, the feeling of the mind becoming overwhelmed, the feeling of just having to acknowledge this dukkha, this discomfort. So we look for a way out, a distraction. And these distractions can form many forms. They can be food. Yummy, 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 yummy. Food. Twinkies. or sex. Or distracting idle conversations. Or entertainments on YouTube. Look at the cat. The cat is doing something funny right now. Yay! I don't have to feel disappointment in life because there's a cat acting funny. I love them, whatever. You get the idea. We seek something that will be a distraction to pull us away so we don't have to feel dukkha. And we don't notice that these distractions are short-term solutions. They don't generally last very long. The impulsive shoe purchase, the binging on cookies, the YouTube video or the Facebook post or whatever we do, they have a very short lifespan, the shelf life of yogurt. And then we're back with dukkha, which will happen again. We'll be sitting there and there will be that feeling of boredom or ding, that feeling of what the fuck am I going to do with my life, or bing, oh shit, how am I going to pay the bills, or wing, what's going to happen with the rest of my life. And then we gotta go again to our distraction, our escape plan, our relief valve, or whatever. So even if these things are really beautiful things, they can be our paintings sometimes can give us relief, or our music, or our writing, or our exercise, riding our bikes. Anything that focuses the mind elsewhere can provide us with an escape. And there's nothing wrong with these things. It's just the fact that we're trying to use these things to avoid ever feeling discomfort that creates the problem, that creates the ugly condition known as addiction, where we take something purely wonderful, which I would love to be able to consume, like alcohol, and turns it into something that I cannot consume. Because we go again and again and again to it, and then eventually it takes on a life of its own, a feedback pattern where we need more and more of this relief valve. It gives us shorter and smaller distraction or ease or relief. And eventually, just the disappointment of it stopped working is the dukkha itself. And it creates, this disappointment creates even more dukkha, more disappointment, more feelings of discomfort. So we have to consume even more. Hopefully it doesn't reach that point, but very often in lives it does. It doesn't always have to be things like drugs or alcohol or food even, or gambling even. It can be, there's times in life where we delve or dive into our work or our projects or our relationships, new relationships. Yay! We all love them. And we all dive into them, losing track of everything else in our lives, losing balance, the illusion it gives that we'll never have to feel pain again. I'll never grow old and die in this relationship. And of course, eventually one day we wake up and reality is back, and then we think, oh, it's their fault. So sometimes people jump from one 3-month relationship to the next, just for that high. But eventually all of our escape plans fail, because the first noble truth is that discomfort is inevitable. There's no way out. There is going to be these disappointments. There are going to be frustrations. And they're not only going to be external, but they're also going to be provided to us by the mind itself. Sometimes when we're in a really great mood, you're on a date maybe, and then your mind has that thought it throws up for you to chew on. The thought is, oh, they don't really like me. They don't like anything I'm saying. Why did I say that? That wasn't funny. What the fuck is going wrong with me? What the fuck is the matter with me? Or you can have just a, out of the blue, a thought of a really embarrassing experience or something you wish hadn't happened, or horrible experience, a traumatic experience might, out of the blue, for no reason, just might appear. So, even if there's nothing external creating the dukkha, the mind will do it for us. It'll toss it up. And then the key is we fall back into very often that second noble truth, that reaction of trying to escape, of trying to avoid it. And then eventually when our patterns of escape become so ingrained, they even turn into identities. We build identities around these escape plans. We actually say, I'm a this, I'm a that, I'm an angry person, I'm a sad person, I'm a person who loves food, I'm a person who hates heights, I'm a person that, we build it around all of the things that we've developed in life to try to avoid the inevitable. And then eventually, if we're lucky, we hit a bottom and it all crashes down. And we wake up one day and we realize that this career that we were giving all of our attention to in the hopes that it would give me a purpose and give me a foundation and a sense of security so that I'd never have to feel all those feelings of loneliness and smallness that I had as a child. Suddenly we wake up and we feel lonely and small. It didn't work. And I say hopefully because we need to hit some sort of a bottom most of the time for spiritual progress to occur. Spiritual practice is not easy. It rarely happens when people are having a high and everything's working. It's great. You know? Having sex all the time is relieving all of my stress. Well, then what are you doing here? I have no idea. I'm getting laid all the time. It's great. I never have to feel sad or alone or unappreciated. People love my body. I'm really good in bed. This is great. Great. I don't know what you're doing here. No idea. That, by the way, has never happened. That's a complete fantasy in my mind. But that's what I would say in the unlikely event that somebody So that was of no use to you at all. See, I'm just going to have conversations with myself, and you get to listen. All right. So the third noble truth is, guess what? If we want to cut out the unnecessary suffering that we add onto life, we actually have to turn towards the dukkha, the discomforts, the frustrations, the feelings that are awkward. We have to turn towards them, and we have to acknowledge them and receive them and actually give them the attention that they deserve. Because all the time we've been trying to escape discomfort, it hasn't gone anywhere. It actually is being held somatically in the body or in the back of the mind as unconscious traumatic experiences. But it doesn't just get wiped away because we've diverted our attention. The fact that we love Breaking Bad or Homeland doesn't mean that our sadness has gone away or our feelings of I didn't get the love and support I needed at crucial times in my life. Those feelings don't go away. They get pushed down and held in a tight stomach or in a hollow feeling in the chest or in a feeling of tightness in the throat or in this feeling in the back of the mind of wariness, of intimacy and opening to love from others. It's still there. It just winds up pushed and twisted into weird formations. So the goal of spiritual practice is to undercut this tendency to want to escape pain, to seek an inoculation from discomfort, and in fact to turn radically and face it, to actually open to it. This doesn't mean we're going to turn into goths and wear white makeup and black, although it probably would be a lot easier spiritual practice if that's all it was, you know, listening to a lot of Sisters of Mercy and Dead Can Dance. If that's all it was, yeah, gee, he's excited by this. I was right all along. He doesn't have to be a goth and that's it.
Just what I want to hear.
Just what you want to hear. It's that simple. Now, it means actually turning and opening towards these feelings that we've been running from all our lives. The feeling of isolation and loneliness and not being loved and being rejected and being, you know, not getting what we've wanted and frustration and confusion and doubt. And all these things, all these ways that they arise and express themselves and unfold, we give our awareness to them. And at first, it sounds sort of scary. If I open to my sadness or my disappointment or my my fears, if I open to these experiences, they'll take me over. They're too powerful, they're too dark, they're too intense. But actually, the good news is that all of these manifestations of the difficult part of life that we've been avoiding, they take a long time to unfold. And if we really open to them without resistance, in my own experience, even working with depression and really, really dark, traumatic memories, I found that the mind can be with far more than we ever imagined it can be. We can be with really, really traumatic memories and dark, despondent feelings without it rendering us a mess. There's a couple of reasons. First, the resistance that we greet the discomfort and the painful feelings is often what creates the bulk of the suffering when an uncomfortable feeling arises. It's not so much the feeling itself, it's the resistance that we greet. The famous story the Buddha told of Sakya's angry demon, where there was this demon that came in that while the King Sakka was away, and it sat on his throne, and his guards got angry and started insulting it, and it got really big and ferocious and started breathing fire, and the guards fled. And it was only when Sakka came back and saw what had happened that he went and he was courteous and he was gentle and he was accepting of the demon, that the demon got smaller and smaller and smaller until he could lift it off of his throne, and it just ran away. This is the key to greeting discomfort and all of the painful experiences that we've been running from. It's stripping away the tendency to greet it with, this is wrong, this is bad. One of the phrases I've been using in my own practice, which I've heard other teachers use as well, is when a difficult memory or image or event comes to mind, I first go to the body and the breath, and I just think the thought, I care about this feeling. I care about this feeling. I don't have my normal, oh no. I purposely think the phrase, I care about this feeling. So that I'm turning or developing the habit of, instead of resisting or pushing away, I'm opening and establishing that I care about all of my experience, not just the fun bits, not just the easy bits, not just the light feelings and the I love you and I love everyone, but those feelings of, I have to deal with another fucking person. All of that. It's all there. But the good news is that when I strip away the resistance, not only is the expression of it, when I work through first the breath and the body, then how it affects my awareness, does my mind collapse and get small, or does it stay open? What are the nature of the thoughts themselves? Are they battering me, or are they very seductive? Are they insulting? Or what? How do the thoughts themselves express the feelings to me and the content to me? I open to all of this, but I make sure that there's a part of me that stands slightly aside and just keeps on repeating, I care about this feeling, I care about this memory, I care about this state, I care about this feeling tone, I care about this. That keeps me slightly bigger, slightly outside of it, so that I'm still observing, I'm not getting pulled in. And the good news is that when we cultivate this compassion, it feels so much more peaceful, a place for the mind to reside, than the normal way we react to anything that arises. We normally either run away, or we attack, or we identify and agree, yeah, those people suck, I hate my job, fuck this. Or, I can't think about this now, go away. Those feeling states for the mind do not cause peace or relaxation or ease. But having compassion and caring about all of our experience creates a mind that can contain everything. Now, I'm not going to go into depth with much of the Fourth Noble Truth. I'm just going to say that this ability to greet everything with ease, with compassion, with caring, is supported by maintaining a meditation practice where we actually take the time to sit and let go of our entire agendas of distraction and obligations and responsibilities and set a time where we develop that practice of turning towards anything that wants our attention, like we did in tonight's meditation. It's also supported by the wisdom that I've been hopefully conveying to you, the knowledge that trying to escape or avoid or run away from does not work, that we have to turn towards our experience. And finally, it's supported by the virtuous practices of not causing harm to ourselves or others through stealing or lying or being careless or wanton intoxication. If we carelessly cause harm to ourselves and others, all we do is create more dukkha and more suffering. And there's enough of it in life already. Why add any more? So I thank you for listening. I hope there was something in tonight's talk that was of value. And now I'm going to turn off the tape.